This is Fresh Air. The sequel to the third highest grossing film of all time opens next week. The new film, Home Alone 2, features the now famous child actor Macaulay Culkin, and my guest Catherine O'Hara returns in the role of the mother. Many of us know O'Hara best from her years with SCTV, the TV sketch comedy show that spoofed television. Her most memorable original character on the show was Lola Heatherton, a temperamental and talentless singer. Several of O'Hara's SCTV co-stars have also gone on to film careers, like John Candy, Martin Short, and Rick Moranis. In Home Alone, O'Hara took her big, noisy family on a Christmas trip to Paris. She knew she forgot something. Turns out she forgot her son, Kevin. The family sets off on another trip in the sequel and, of course, manages to lose Kevin again.
We get him to the airport this time, but he's tagging along behind the whole family, running. And we're running again, of course. We're late. And he's following his father, who's wearing a camel coat and has, you know, the hair of John Hurt, which is on his head. And another man who looks just like John Hurt from behind with the same coat crosses paths with John Hurt. And he follows that man instead onto a plane to New York.
How has Macaulay Culkin changed? Has he become this big spoiled child star now?
He's the demon child now. No, he's sweet. He's the same kid. The people around him, not his, you know, immediate family and the people who are supposed to be around him, but, you know, fans and visitors to the sets have they're different. You know, he's got this giant aura of success and people want to touch him.
I'm interested in hearing how you became a performer. Were you a performing kind of kid, the kind of kid who always wanted to do showbiz?
I guess. I think, actually, you know, coming from a big family and coming from parents who are really funny, I think, on their own, it was really kind of a natural way of thinking and talking in our home, you know, just sort of trying to make each other laugh, and it was the best way to get attention at the dinner table.
Now, you grew up in Toronto, or just outside of Toronto,
yes.
But you, I believe, got started in Second City, Chicago.
No, actually, I was in Second City, Toronto.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they opened it about 10 or 15 years after the other one opened, I guess, in 1973. And John Candy was putting the first Toronto touring company together, and he hired myself and my brother Marcus and Peter Aykroyd, Dan Aykroyd's younger brother, and a bunch of other people. We got in the touring company, and then Joe Flaherty was directing the main company, and the two women in the main company were Rosemary Radcliffe and Gilda Radner. And so he asked me to understudy them. And then maybe 3-4 months later, Gilda decided to leave and go to National Lampoon Touring Company out of New York. And so I went with the cast to understudy for the first 2 weeks, and then in the third week, I took over for Gilda, and she went to do National Lampoon.
So you got hired as an understudy for Gilda Radner?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, when you're understudying Gilda Radner, were you expected to do her characters if she got sick, or would the sketches change and you would do your own characters?
Oh, no, you fit into the show, and you know, I started basically imitating her. So I even got a perm to look like her.
Really?
Yeah.
So what characters was she doing that you had to do?
Actually, I would say maybe in that show it was an early version of her Emily Letella. I think that's the woman that would say never mind. You know, she'd on the news on Saturday Night Live because she was doing an interview. This is one scene I remember, an interview scene with John Candy interviewing, and she was talking about her shoes, being able to talk to her, and she was just sort of this sweet old lady, and you had to believe what she said because she was so convincing. And I would, you know, dare to take her place. And when I did take her place, actually replace her in Chicago, the producer and director at the time, Bernie Solins, I look back on it now and I realize he must have really missed her. And it was like, a man who'd lost his wife and had a new girlfriend and wanted the new girlfriend to be like the wife. Because he just said, no, no, Gilda did it like this. No, Gilda looked at him like this. No, say it like Gilda. Do it like Gilda. And I was, like, weeping by the end of the day thinking, I'm not Gilda. What does he want from me? Let me be myself. But I had to. That's the way it is at Second City, because you do fit into a show. You have to start by imitating the person you're, you know, as not to disrupt the show and throw the other people off. You have to fit in as easily as you can, you know, and then you find your way.
Catherine O'Hara is my guest. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Catherine O'Hara, and she's She starred in Home Alone, and she's starring in the sequel, which is about to open. And you probably also know her from earlier film roles and also from her years on SCTV. Let me ask you about some of the characters you created for SCTV. Can we start with Lola Heatherton?
Yeah.
She was a real, like, showbiz singer, somewhere between a has-been and a never-was.
Oh, I love playing kind of cocky, untalented people.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
So did the Heatherton come from Joey Heatherton?
They'd done Sammy Maudlin's show a few times on the show, and I'd only gone on a couple of times as a character that didn't fit in, like this. I did a Trish Nutley thing, which is supposed to be like a starlet, and I went on, and I didn't understand, you know, the game, and they were all real, you know, insincere and show busy, and I didn't fit in. So I didn't have a character that was sort of one of them, you know. And then we did, we were asked to do the Junos or something. No, not the Junos. The Canadian, the Nellies, the Canadian Television Awards. We were asked to do it live. And Joe Flaherty and the others wanted to do a Sammy Maudlin show. And I had to get a character for the show that was like them, right? A sleazy kind of has-been Vegas character. And I think the night before we started writing it, I saw Lola Falana on The Tonight Show. And she was singing Sometimes When We Touch. And she was making her bottom lip quiver. And she was really crinkling up her eyes, trying to get some tears going. So by the end, she was crying. But I thought, well, there's a thing to use. I'll use that. And I'd also just always been fascinated with Joey Heatherton from those Be a Perfect Sleeper, Buy a Perfect, really Serta ads. Mm-hmm. It's the only thing I'd ever seen her in. But I liked her look. And so I went with her blonde hair and her look and the Lola Falana kind of tear thing whenever I could. And otherwise, it wasn't based on anyone.
And
I took their two names, you know, Lola Heatherton.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you had male dancers sometimes, too, didn't you?
Yeah. Jewel Hallmeyer was our costume designer on the show, and I was doing a Lola special once, and we needed dancers. And I think they'd already done maybe one other, you know, fictitious special on the show where they had danced. But for my show, we called them the Jewel Hallmeyer dancers, and they became the Jewel Hallmeyer. And then it was great. Like, Jewel said he got, you know, phone calls to do, like, shows on his own with the dancers. And it was him. You know, he's a wardrobe designer. And then there was a grip, and then there were a few of the writers, Bob Dolman and Doug Steckler and a few other writers on the show. And it was so funny because they would really rehearse and try to get it right, and that just only made it better, you know, because they could never get it quite right.
Now, you used to do Meryl Streep, and this was the period when Streep was famous for developing her character through accents, in a way.
Yeah.
You had acted in a movie with her in Heartburn in 1986, but
that was much later, yeah.
Yeah, so you were doing her before you were with her.
But I only did her once, and that was Big Jim and Billy Saul Hurock, or whatever they were called. Joe and John had these kind of country bumpkin characters who had a showbiz talk show, and then they would bring on guests just to blow them up. And usually it was people they didn't like. You know, they would sort of get people in show business by having them on the show and blowing them up. But I think at the time, Meryl Streep had done a lot of movies where she was crying a lot, and they just wanted me to go on and start crying and then blow me up. This is so stupid. I can't explain it. They wrote it. Don't blame me. But that was always the case with any impersonation. I would, you know, I'd write something or somebody else would write something, and then you would just have to get that impersonation. You'd try to get it together as well as you could just for that scene, and then it would be gone. And when I did try to do Meryl Streep in that scene, I had about five lines, and maybe two of them sounded like her, and the other three didn't. You know, so she was not somebody I did regularly.
Now, what about Katharine Hepburn, your version of her?
Yeah, I that's the same sort of thing where I think the first time I did it, Dave Thomas and Rick Moranis had written a scene for her, for her to be in. And so then I just went and watched a couple of tapes, and she was supposed to be as herself, you know. So you were really lucky if whoever you were supposed to impersonate had recently done something, you know, for television, or you get a tape of it, you know. And I got a tape of her and Dick Cavett, which was her being herself. And I just sort of watched that a few times, and then I sat in a room by myself and tried to wreck my voice, basically. And I just would go, until I basically wrecked my voice, and then I would do her. But I only did her a couple of times on the show, and each time I had to, you know, really work on it for, you know, a half hour or whatever beforehand.
You left SCTV in 1983, after around 7 years?
Yeah, I think I actually left earlier.
Oh, okay.
I left in, maybe 81 or 82 I left it. Oh, big deal, huh? Like, I can remember.
What was it like when you left? What kind of offers were you hoping for? What happened to your career in the next couple of years?
I'll tell you what I was really hoping for when I left was just dating. I was hoping to get offers of dates because I had no personal life it finally dawned on me when I was doing SCTV, and it was, though it was just so exciting and great, and, you know, I have nothing but fond memories of those days. I got to be like 25, I guess, or something around there, mid-20s, and you know, my oldest sister and got married at 23, and my next oldest sister got married at 21, and then my next oldest sister got engaged at 21, but didn't get married. But I saw myself, you know, when I was younger, as being married and having kids by the time I was 25, and here I was on this show, and I was really having fun with these people, but most of them went home to families, and, you know, I went home to myself, and it just, it finally dawned on me that I had, you know, sort of neglected my personal life, because I'd fallen into the career, and it was great, and I took advantage of it, but then I thought, no, I also have to take care of that other side of life. So I quit mainly to get a personal life together, and then eventually to, you know, try to get into film.
But, you know, when you quit to get a personal life, you can't very well have your agent put out, you know, put out the word, no. Catherine O'Hara is now available for dating and marriage.
No, you just sort of have more free hours.
So did you meet people?
Yeah, I did, eventually. But it's funny, then I dated for a few years, and I would go audition, you know, I was living in Toronto, and I would fly to New York or LA to audition for things, and I did odd jobs, but nothing really great. And although I got After Hours, and then I got Heartburn, that was pretty nice. But you know, they were sort of over a span of a few years, and then I was going through this really kind of bad. I guess it's the closest I've ever been to any kind of breakdown. Although it wasn't that extreme, but I was very depressed, and I was alone. And I'd bought a house in Toronto, which I never thought I'd have to do on my own. I'd figure that's the kind of thing you do with a husband. But I bought it with my mom. I mean, I bought it money-wise, but my mom helped me buy it. So then I was just sort of alone in this house and got real depressed, and I was hanging around with my best friend, Robin. And months before, I'd been called about auditioning for Beetlejuice, this movie that this guy, Tim Burton, was going to do. So then I was going through this depression, like months later, in Toronto, thinking, what am I doing with my life? And, oh, I'm alone and all. Although I did have my family, and I was very lucky to have my family in Toronto. But anyway, I went through this, self-centered depression. And the next morning, after this peak of depression, or ebb, whatever you call it, my agent called, and she said, remember that guy Tim Burton in that movie Beetlejuice? Well, now they want to offer it to you. And I thought, oh, maybe this is a sign from God to get out of the house, meet people, do something, be productive. So I went and did it, and I also... this started with the dating idea. I actually met the guy that I married this year.
Oh, doing Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Isn't that a cute story? I'm sorry. I do go on.
Yeah, it's a nice story.
Yeah.
So is your husband in show business too?
Yeah, I met him on the movie. He's a production designer.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Bo Welch. He designed Beetlejuice. He designed Lost Boys was his first movie. He did Batman Returns, Accidental Tourist, Grand Canyon, and now he's doing a movie with Mike Nichols that Jack Nicholson's going to star in.
Hmm.
He's very talented.
What would you most like to be doing, though, in the movies?
In the movies?
Yeah, or on television.
Eventually, I would love to write screenplays and direct them
mm-hmm.
with my friends
mm-hmm.
as the stars.
That reminds me, one of our producers was telling me earlier today about a video that you did that was shown on David Letterman a few years ago
yeah.
about PMS.
Yeah.
I missed it, but maybe you could tell me something about it.
Well, they did it for 2 or 3 years, and this was the first year. They had a Thanksgiving film festival on the David Letterman show, and they would invite people to make their own film, and they gave us a budget of, I think, $10,000 or $15,000, And they had, on the first show, they had Michael Keaton, he did one, and Bette Midler did one, and Paul Schaefer did one. And they asked Andrea and I. And at first we were like, hey, why don't let us each do one? But we got into the idea of doing it together. And the idea was that you take this money, you do whatever you want. You spend it, you know, whatever way you want, and or pocket it in the whatever way you want. And then present it on the show. We had to go on the show and talk about the making of it and then show the film. And so we were coming up, Andrea and I were getting together every day and trying to come up with ideas, and we came up with a lot of silly ideas. And then I was in such a bad mood. I was going through PMS at the time, and it finally hit me that that's what I was going through. And I said, why don't we write about something important, like what I'm going through right now? And she'd been through it, too, most months. So we developed this silly little film about two women who make a film about PMS, but they're going through PMS while they're making the film. So everything's sort of twisted about this little film. And they have little segments where they interview people and where they have, you know, dramatic, you know, simulations of women, you know, in relationships with PMS. And then it would cut back to them doing little introductions to these segments. And every time you saw them, they were either, you know, having a fist fight or crying or, you know. And the whole show by the end didn't make any sense because, you know, because of what they were going through. And both Andrea and I have talked about this so many times. Both of us have had more recognition from that film than anything else either of us have done.
Really?
Yeah. Both of us have had so many, especially men, come up to us in the last, like still, like last week I had somebody come up to me and say this, that they didn't believe that their wife or girlfriend, you know, who claimed to be, you know, experiencing PMS, they didn't believe them until they saw this. We'd actually convinced men that PMS existed.
See, this is why I would never vote for a woman president.
Oh, get out of here. Oh, you mean that's what they would say?
No.
Thanks. Oh, all the more reason to. I'd say men are, you know, when I'm going through PMS, that's what men are like all the time. That's a constant sort of, that's normal for guys.
Actress Catherine O'Hara, she co-stars in Home Alone 2, which opens next week. This is Fresh Air.